Just if we were just saying, next time we're going to try to put the downstairs in lecture theater because it's such a beautiful room. And we're going to invent some mechanism to make most of the seats disappear so that people don't fill the whole auditorium and sit towards the front. And then next week somewhere will be Carol's, and I don't see, and I don't, does anyone have notes to make?
Yes.
Tchaikovsky, yes. Something like this, where Carol will be speaking on the jump street of the part of states, and then keep watching the website, because by now I think we have all of the schedules to talk to on the website, which is should be on the website. Also, to this about various of the other talks, so let me emphasize that we try to have all the talks on the website. Anybody who organized the talk, please send it to me then and get it on the website so that we can pass that information. I've stated at least a week in advance.
So in case of conflict between emails and websites, is the website sufficient? Because sometimes it's been the other way around. The emails have been right and the website has been wrong.
I can't completely answer that question, but we'll work very hard to have the website feature. Okay, but there's a time lag et cetera, for the website. But in general, it's really an answer. It's a good idea if people don't change the talks of last year. Because there have been talks we've changed a few hours before, and it's taken a long time. Okay, anyway, all of these are organizational problems associated with Lucas and the Philippines. To emphasize again for the people who are coming here, for who are coming late, next time we're going to try to have a meeting these downstairs in the lecture theater. But today we're here, and today we're very happy to have Maxime Hatzlov. Maxime is one of us. He is a new associate and also at the University of Guelph. And we're very happy to have him here with us. And we wanted him here to say something provocative about particle physics that would get us all thinking. And I think he's complied with five quests for high energy frontiers. And I'll let him introduce the rest of his talk.
All right, thank you very much for the opportunity. Before I start, I'd like to overview over which one of the things that seems to be like. And I'm forced to have modern landscape formats for these like this, and I'm just going down in order to keep on the let's do landscape for you. If you guys can read, if you ask me, I'll alright, so this is we usually did, not like a colloquium for graduate students, but a colloquium for theorists, which I thought beside a lot of words, I include a lot of formulae, but without connecting formulae together, we could use theorists can get out of the formulae. It will be mainly based on my paper in physics today, basically, that I wrote in the time. And on other papers with Rob and with Dario and Karina Machuri, and sort of the new piece of information that comes into this talk is the work I've done in collaboration with technical people, and also we continue to develop the same ideas with basically I'd like to say a few words about the two generic ways that exist in particle physics which we can gather information about the short distance physics. And after that, I will spend some time on theory and experiment related to the interfaith moments, and I will try to explain how I can close distances. And if I had here at the multi-team scale, and after that my talk really become provocative because I will move into this very unsure realm of ORS violation and CPT violation, and I will try to show that vector field theories can in fact treat these problems consistently and have a very good description for some of the not description, but it could be to provide a very universal language that allows to prove our inspiration at low energy and astrophysical and cosmological settings. But at the same time, there is an apparent disconnect with some predictions that follow from the activity of me and his friends, quantum gravity in particular, and so I will try to end up with this by saying that I don't understand what's going on at the moment, but there are certain things we can do on both sides to make quantum gravity flow smoothly into the field. So suppose we have a new physics at some, say, GB scale, above the electric scale. And to access this physics, we have two general means. We either create a collider, combine the particles, produce these particles directly in the experiment. In that case, we need large energy to access the distances, right, to produce the resonances, which we need to decay to detect the time. In our machines like atoms. And another alternative method of trying to catch some information about the underlying physics is precision measurement at low energy. You don't accelerate particles that much. You see and measure very precisely their progresses. And maybe you can learn something about short distances via, say, quantum effects, right? Exchange by heavy particles or looping. Clearly, in this case, you need a very, very high precision because the effects usually scale inversely with the scale of physics. These two ways are complementary, and both of them are being pursued actively in current high precision physics program. Some experiments that say 5-10 years ago we considered high energy are now sort of falling more and more into this category. For example, a very successful physics program in Japan or at SLAT is in some sense the physics probing very short distances at the scale of MW using the probes of the energy of 5 GeV. So that's already falling into the category of precision measurements. It's not such a small experience. Nevertheless, even though these two ways are complementary, as the time scales and the money needed to run the high energy physics programs exponentiate, the number of attempts to detect the new physics at low energy also grows because these kind of individual experiments are much cheaper. Well, not every precision measurement can tell us about the nature at short distance. If you open the particle data group and look at the mass of the photon, you will see that it's known to a considerable accuracy. For the last detail, 4 digits here, in principle, they know about the existence of weak forces inside the nucleus. You could learn some information about W and C, and if you measure further, the next digit already knows about the presence or absence of the Higgs. Well, that's very well, but it doesn't tell us anything at all, simply because to calculate, to extract information about feed interactions from this fish. We need to go over all these dishes that stand before that, and we can't do that because we don't have a rigorous treatment of strong interactions. It's not like a highly snapped where you can go and calculate all the value. So, from here, but of course we can learn a lot about weak interactions from nuclei, just simply looking at the beta decays or any weak processes. And that is, we come to the conclusion that in order to be able to study the short distance here, we have to actually go into the channels that are not induced by a strong or electromagnetic process. So what you can study very precisely at short distances and what provides information about what you can study at low energies and what provides information about short distances are physics of Z and Z prime, for example, through the parity violation in atoms. Normal electromagnetic or strong force would not induce any rotation or the polarization of fine passive planets, but the exchange by a Z boson would, and it does. And this effect has been discovered maybe 25 years ago, and it's also fair to mention that a person who got a Nobel Prize for the Bose-Einstein transistors, Carl Wieman, spent most of his career efforts on this particular experiment, which is very informative about the properties of this field. You can study C violation at the Gini scale, and beyond by measuring electric dipole moments. I will return to this in a second. You can study properties of extra Higgs bosons gifted by the Xenkita or for further symmetries. You can study non-standard model physics by means of measuring the anomalous magnetic moment of the muon. And this is something interesting because in this particular case we can actually go and calculate order by order the contributions of the electromagnetic forces and actually compare it with the experiment. But those of you who follow the developments in particle physics know that actually the time discrepancy between the experiment and the theoretical predictions at 2.5 sigma involve very sophisticated QCD calculation and extraction of hadronic polarization from a different experiment at the percent level. And as this situation persists, even if the error bars any discrepancy would increase, it would be very hard confidently say that this is the effect of the new physics when the strong interactions are involved in the discipline. Well, we can also study Lorentz and CPT breaking effects that may arise from some variations of string theory or quantum gravity. What you cannot study at Lorentz is the processes that mimic all the symmetries of the electromagnetic interactions of strong interactions. And notably, you will never be able to determine the existence of the absence of the such a fundamental particle as the Higgs of the standard model. You can do whatever precision measurements you like, will not be able to extract it. And you need a combiner.
A little, but what is the
in many variants of the say string theory, you have a condition you want in addition to S2+1, which usually has to be broken at some higher scale, and that creates an additional neutral vector loss that as a matter of fact also violates parity. it's not required, but it may exist, right? The unfortunate part about many high precision measurements, they are looking for something that is not necessarily required. It may exist, but not necessarily required. Okay, so now I'll go on. I'll just say a few words here. Here's the chart that represents a brief story of the weak interactions as things unfolded in second half of the last century. The very important point was made by Pavlik, who actually introduced neutrino by looking at the energy calculation in beta decays, and that's a very important step. You have to first identify your low energy degrees of freedom. After that, the next step was done by Fermi, who actually, without knowing anything about the true nature of the weak force, right? Fermi tries the interaction between the proton, neutron, electron, and neutrino. And then came an amazing discovery of parity violation, which actually told us that instead of one structure that relied on the symmetries of natures such as parity, which were absolutely identified, assumed, and granted, this discovery meant that parity can be broken, indeed, and it led to the generalization of the Fermi interaction, so that at that time people wrote down 10 or 15 or all possible different structures you can have. And then it was up to the experiment to actually find out what is the correct structure of the weak force. And we know now that the charge currents satisfy D minus A conditions with great accuracy. This, in fact, led to the understanding that matter falls into the chiral representations, and that there is also a spooky process after the discovery of neutral current. So the parity was very instrumental in actually elucidating this very important fact of nature for the matter falls into the chiral representation. This had a long lasting impact on all body of physics, including string theory, as string theorists know very well. The very development of string theory was on hold for many years because there was a problem of reproducing chiral matter, and it was finally solved in new ways. And then from here, like I said, after the existence of WMC was inferred, we could go one step further, discover WMC, and then make precision measurements with WMC at web, right? And then complete again the very similar side. Fermi tries all possible interactions and study its consequences in the experiment. So from here, I just want to say that the standard model is the effective field theory. That is, you have some new physics that, effective field theory is the basic language of the standard model. You have very many energy thresholds in the standard model. As you cross them, you can see how beautifully the effective field theory works. What you need to know is there's some new physics at the heavy scale M, and you're sitting at the lower scale U and perform experiments there, right? And you receive information about the heavy scale but through the effective operators formulated at the lower scale. And the importance of the operators obviously depends on their mass dimension. The higher the dimension of the operator, the less important it is. I don't want to oversimplify things. There are, of course, contributions that you cannot simply catch in the simple power series expansion. But that's another story. Since it works so beautifully within standard model, there are reasons to believe that the standard model itself is infected. Well, why the effective field theory is so important at beginning? Well, I just say a few words. First of all, it works beautifully. It's very transparent, physical, and the rules of the game are well defined. All the machinery of the field theory that we know in the normal classical theories can be applied to effective field theories, provided that you know your cutoff. What is also important that you can parameterize your inputs. Even if you don't know what the actual theory at the fundamental scale is, you can always, but you know your effective degrees of freedom, you can always construct the effective operators that you think that any effective operator that may arise, and apply experiment and extract information about this. If you know your effective degrees of freedom, you can parameterize all possible interactions occurring at that surface.
Can I just ask some limits on the generality of this problem? And can you imagine that the real theory is such that it's taking this approach and it's not the source and stuff?
I'm pretty sure that you can miss something. For example, if you have some non-perturbative effects, and we can, so far I just assumed that everything can be expandable in the series of 1 over n, right? First of all, this series cannot converge to an exact answer that's going to be an asymptotic series, right? And they are going to be non-power-like directions. And, sure, so that's an approximation. But the higher the separation of the two scales are, the better it works, right? And this so far has been a strictly practical statement, right? So whatever we saw in standard model falls into the realm of the field theory. So there is no experiments that will go and sort of outside of this, right? If you take Fermi interaction, you can describe the scattering of the particles at medium energies. You can describe processes in stars, neutrino oscillations, etc. So far, there hasn't been any indications that you're missing.
It seems to me that there is an additional limit that I noticed that could be very important when you notify that gravity, which is locality. That you're doing an extension in the terms of another dimension.
Absolutely.
And most of quantum things, strangely coming on the scene, very things are in some way related to the non-locality.
So I'm very happy to discuss that.
Well, my question is this distinction about non-quantum physics, which might be down to in light of that.
It might be, but however, I would like to stress that the non-locality at the Planck scale itself is not enough to fall outside of the string. Strings are also non-local at the scale of string, but you do have the local field, effective field theory description of the string.
Then you look at the common practice of looking at the processes. And that affects very much going into experiments. And look at the phenomenon in the same thing with the overrider effect and the magic consequences. So then the formula is the best of the field.
Well, it might be. For a few years ago, I was myself very surprised by some admission of string theories. They said, well, maybe string theory is still defined in de Sitter space, right? So what I had in my mindset is that you have string theory, you integrate out the whatever M string scale, right? You end up with the effective field theory, which is the MSSM or minimal supersymmetry, so the standard model or such, right? The supersymmetry is getting broken somehow, and you may end up with an effective value of the cosmology, of course. It could be positive, it could be negative, right? But it's an infrared effect, right? If after that people are telling me, oh well, this is an infrared point, the cosmology of course, it actually spells doubts about string theory itself. That sounds to me like a violation of this, for example,
effective field theory.
Yeah.
So far I've been very practical. When I said what's been observed in nature falls this flat. And string theory, neither string theory, no quantum gravity will say it hasn't happened in nature, right? I'm trying to be for a longer. So, but I mean, later on, maybe we should take a look at it. Maybe I'm not sure to grant pretty soon. I'm happy to discuss the conditions of normal health. All right. Actually, the first people who actually got this brilliant idea that maybe parity is not respected by strong interactions were Purcell and Ramsey in 1949. They asked the following question. We know that the electromagnetism is described by Maxwell's theory. There you can prove that the parity is the true symmetry. We don't know the true symmetry that goes behind nuclear forces. Therefore, we don't have a theoretical proof that the parity is concerned with nuclear forces. And the report, we have to do search for that. So they came up with an idea of measuring an electric dipole moment. If you have a neutron, say, in the magnetic field, it's effective direction is here, and this is an addition that can or may exist and will exist at some point due to the electric dipole moment or EDM. So if this little d is non-zero, both parity and boundary are so unbroken. And if CPT holds, then the CQ is broken as well. Since then, there's been a dramatic increase of activity in the measurements of the EDMs, and these are three best measurements, even though the numbers are that look very different. The details of atomic physics, which I spare you from, work out such that these numbers turn out to be of a roughly safe level of sensitivity to physics. So how to measure EDMs is, well, ideologically it's very simple. You apply a monitor to magnetic field and a huge electric field and reverse it from time to time, watching whether your spin perception changes. The best experimental sensitivity achieved in these experiments is, in terms of the sensitivity to the frequency shift, is 10 to the minus 33 dB, or it's half a nanometer. So this is, if you invert it and get the time, it's over a year. So it's an extremely tiny frequency. And over the past 5 weeks, there's been an explosion of activity in the EDM research. And that's because the nuclear physics and atomic physics is also kind of getting very interested in the question, what can we do, actually, to explore nature at short distances? And it turns out not that many experiments are very sensitive about nature at short distances. And CQ-adding experiments and research for EDMs are. And you see here that there's a great number of experiments right now, including the first Canadian project at Triumph, spearheaded by my colleague Carl Spencer. And there is also a new deuteron EDM project at DNL, so basically ran by the same group of people that to the GMAT School of Nuclear Engineering. And this proposal already weighs like $30 million. So this even though I said these things are cheap, they're not so cheap anymore. And the more precise one you have your measurements, the more investments you're going to need. The neutron experiments, for example, are now done in will be done at a new installation source in our region, etc. So this becomes a very very active field. And why?
Why should we bother anyways? We know that CP is broken in the standard model. Why is it always pursue helium search? Maybe we would run into the effects of this error model. We wouldn't know anything about new interactions anyways. Well, it turns out that by a fortunate accident in standard model, all EDMs predicted are extremely common. You have to visit all three generations of works. That brings you down by five orders of magnitude of mixing angles. There is additional separations by like work masses and the four EDMs usually arises at three. And so the outcome is such that the standard model predicts 10 to the minus 32 centimeters or so for the EDM of the neutron. This is six orders of magnitude away from current experimental sensitivity, which is great.
So just a question about the difference. There's 10 to the minus 32 centimeters means that you're probably 10 to the minus 32 centimeters.
Good eye, right. Well, but I'll return to this in a quick second. It's very similar to the Planck lens, right? So Kobayashi Maskawa does not provide any background. If you see an EDM of an electron tomorrow, that means that you won't be pondering around, oh, maybe that's the effect of the strong interactions by five happened with T-minus. You know that somewhere, not far, around the lecture system, there's new resonances, new physics, right? And you can go build the colliders and search for them. So in that sense, EDMs become, in some sense, a discovery. You can discover any new physics, of course not. You have to violate to get EDMs.
I mean, just as a comment, even here, the experiments are limiting, but they only tell us about stable matter. It's quite possible that unstable matter, like muon or some worked out states or something, violate P and T. Maybe that's why the electric dipole of the electron is close to zero. Doesn't mean you know it from muon.
That's correct. Yes, in most of the models, they of course would
be
more disconnected, but I agree with you.
It would be a strange model to have different for one
right,
or the other.
Right,
we should
right.
remember empirically that's all of these experiments tell us.
Yes. So that it would be of course very nice to expand the and in fact, T-2 group actually wanted to have a separate muon EDM method. And their project was pulled down, but I hope that it will be resurfaced in Japan or KPI. The second motivation to search for EDMs is that, the Kobayashi Maskawa phase or theta QCD cannot be a source of variant and bivariant in the CP3 if you want to generate a dynamic. Neither of the two phases can be the source of the variance. And report some source, additional sources of CP values, or maybe CPT values, I needed them later. And in particular, some models of variant genesis, like electric variant genesis, you predict phases around the electric scale, and by such, you also are bound to have the EDMs close to the negative levels. And the third motivation to search for EDMs is that, they're most easily used in the theories with additional scalars and search for scalars. one of the main goals of the high energy program, right? We are going to search for supersymmetry at velocity, etc. And therefore, it's nice that. High energy physics and low energy experiments will go hand in hand searching for these fields. Well, this is a pretty common that what kind of scales we in principle can throw, knowing that at 10 to the minus 32 centimeters we hit the background of this standard model and we can't say anything. Well, but in fact, there are two generalizations of an EVM interaction that we can write down. So we can write down two-dimension file operators. One that is the standard one that people write down, this is CTT transferring and CTR. And this interaction, and there is another interaction that can be also written down, but usually people ignore it because CTT is assumed to be transferring. So if you And that's in effective field theory. If I introduce a preferred frame and thereby break for that symmetry, then I can find an operator that will be exactly an EVM in the lower entropy. It will be simply concerned by the breaking well, naively, you would think that I can probe the new physics, I can have a guess for the physics of T, should be some group factors. Maybe not, times the CT phase divided by some phase, right? And by inverting the 10 to the minus 32, you naturally come very close to the flat scale indeed. Well, that's certainly true for this operator, but not quite true for that minor part, because what we also suspect about new physics at the high scale is that it's preserved as the two plus one invariance. And if you take this operator and generalize it to SU2 plus U1 in symmetric form, you actually see that they will have to have a Higgs web inside. So the scaling of the CT dielectric effect is the Higgs web divided by the scale of the new physics square. And in that case, you can probe only up to 10 to the 8 GeV, right? But this would, of course, this only is applicable only to the community that studies quantum gravity. For anyone who does colliders, you can say, well, you guys are sensitive to 10 to the 8 GeV scale, and they will just say,
So just what you're saying is that if there is a CPT card effect,
yeah, you can research the
new at quantum scale, exactly, see the presence sensitivity.
Wow. No, not at the presence of CPT. No, it's still six orders of magnitude away. It will be seen before or at the time when you approach the fictional scale and more. So in principle, if being very optimistic, if you increase the accuracy, at some point you may in fact.
Just to clarify, that last one is only there if you impose the SU2 plus U1 variant generalization, right?
This one?
The one at the bottom.
And one at the bottom, okay. Right. That what I was trying to say, that this one over here, in terms of SU2 plus U1 generalization, corresponds to dimension 6.
Right. Scale. And that it's not necessary to impose that. You're having to sure.
Yes, indeed, I do. If I don't impose that, I don't know how I would go about precision measurements at lab, which tell me that. But if I can fix that, right, then artificially I can probably push or create a model where the EVM would scale as the first power. What is the Fermi constant? You mean the strongly interactive case? At that point, you would still be bounded to the T scale anyways, right? I mean, you cannot boost this strongly interactive weak scale far beyond, right? So it's not going to be painful to the H2 anyways. It's around the T scale.
But if you're CPT violating, it also looks to be inverse violating.
Indeed, because there is no other known way for me at least to break CPT without breaking inverse violating. There is even a theorem proven lately. I haven't gotten to any proof of that, but it says that CPT can be broken only if inverse violations exist. I have to look at the proof. Alright, so I'll just go on and advertise my work. So over the years I've been working on the sort of the application of EVMs to supersymmetric models and some aspects of the QCD involved calculations. And that's the chart. It's very visible. So here is the energy, here is the TV energy, which is an atom. So the actual calculation from a fundamental CP phase and say a scalar quark mass to an observable is a long way. The SUSY quark you can prove rather easily, or at least algorithmically, once you know your sort of parameter space, which is your model. But then you opt for the at some point you have to do strong interactions, and the strong interactions enter as say matrix elements. And I've been working on the sort of QCD matrix elements applying the QCD subject analysis to calculate the neutron EVM and find and calculate the most of the EVMs for both. Complete the study is published this year together with this. And I should say that I was working on QCD calculation mostly with aggregates.
So one of the easiest to the extension needs to be effective with the score.
Well, it is all of the Yes, sure. If you have a CPU learning phase here, and if you have a CPU learning phase here, the actual electrodynamic moments that we induce is the phase divided by the scale squared times the mass of the particle. That's very rough scale. Right? So this has to be very small. So it's either the phase and the fermion level, or the scales are in TU scale. Having said that, I sort of deliberately ignored the problem with theta QCD. And today, or yesterday, probably a good timing to mention something about QCD. This is one of the problems you encounter in effective field theory. These are problems of nature. You think, well, this is the leading order operator dimension 4, has to dominate all your observables. It can be sensitive to the CP violation happening infinitely far. Again, it was super small. Right? But in fact, what we know is this angle is very small, 10 to the minus 9, 10 to the minus 8. And the most plausible explanation people came up with is that because of the relaxation mechanism, we call the axial mechanism. Of course, we have a prediction of the new particle mass. To be fair, we should say that a lot of sources for axiom have to be lyrically discovered, right? But it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. This is the graph of the sensitivity of the planned different experiment for some sample of the SUSY parameter space and the phase at the level of the CP-related phase at the level of 4.3 and the sort of the observables are normalized from their kind experimental limits and the upper curve of the different is normalized at the target sensitivity of 3 times 10 to the minus 27. And so everywhere above 1, that means that the bounds are violated. So even with a sort of 0.1 or 0.3 phase, you would have, with a different medium, you would have a reach up beyond 10 GB. And that's beyond any possible scale that LHC can throw. So that's why it's important. conclusion for that part is that the email measurements are sensitive to CP violation at the multi-team scale. They must be continued as they can lead to a discovery of the physics of our big scale and possibly by a boundaries of the problems. Now I come to a more speculative part of my talk. I'm very happy because I have only 15 minutes left, so maybe I won't say things that are silly. It would be fair to say that the Planck scale itself is inferred from all energy measures. We don't have a direct experimental proof that there is a Planck scale, right? And that's the scale of quantum gravity can be a bit lower, can be all the way down to the Tini scale, which I find very unnatural. But nevertheless, we infer about the existence of a Planck scale here, right? From all energy. What is obvious that at the moment, if you have a high energy scattering of the particles, right, with the momentum transfer, energy transfers on the order of the Planck's mass, then the interaction becomes strong, and most likely our understanding of the gravity will flow into some different direction. That with the string theory, maybe we could get some other things. So that I can, in principle, hypothesize what two possible outcomes, and according to me, these are three outcomes. That's the nature of our disagreement. So the first outcome is sort of pessimistic scenario when you say, well, to throw up an M plank, you need the momentum transfer on the order of M plank. Then it's faultless, right? And all the operators that you receive at low energy are like the curvature squared or sidebar size squared, so they're not violating any symmetries. And in that case, apart maybe from some cosmology where you could access very high energies in inflation, which is also quite questionable, apart from that, you have very, very little hope of in the Planck scale in this web. In this scenario two, in principle, what again happened is that your short distance behavior can be a lot more sort of interesting, and as an outcome, you could have some violation of Lorentz invariance, spontaneous violation of Lorentz invariance, for example, for CPT. In that case, higher scales of quantum gravity can be accessed by the high precision measurements or by astrophysical tools. And there are claims that there is a third type. Lorentz invariance is actually preserved, but somehow modified, and that's precisely the point I don't understand. Okay, so I won't say anything about this scenario. This is sort of the examples of the optimistic outcome. One thing, you can, for example, take the string theory, right, and have a non-commutative vector. And reduce string theory to non-commutative field theory. Then you have the presence of an external frame given by your external tensor theta and mu. And then you can ask the question, is it possible, or how this would possibly manifest your experiment? Well, I'll get to this in a second, but then you will be sensitive to it. Through low energy measurements, you will be sensitive to actually very high scale. That's an example where you can actually calculate the effects of non-commutative speech on your observer if you know it. But then there are some other approaches that started from pure guesses. Right? So then people would say, what if I have some kind of a fundamental relation between the energy and momentum that is getting modified. Right? And many people have followed these two steps and started to modify this first relations. Right? And for me, it certainly smells effective field theory because it has a large mass in the denominator. Right? So my first intention is to apply field theory. And in this case, one can study, say, astrophysics consequences where this term, due to the high energy, accessible in astrophysics. This is not energy transfer, right? That's important. It's just energy. When this term becomes comparable to m squared, then you have some dramatic signatures of that. I also would like to draw your attention that if this energy is small, right, along the order of m squared, this term is of course very small, and relative to this one, it's relative to the mass, it's 10 to the minus 19 GeV. But what I was trying to argue that the low energy precision measurements are sensitive to the, in principle, to the frequency shifts on the order of 10 to the minus 33 GeV. And that's at least tells you that whatever your theory you are dealing with for previous this computation should not only address the high energy medium, but you should really look at down what happens at low energy and calculate, for example, the spin energies, things like that. I'd say, because if you have the E cubed here, the error, and I would assume that this term would violate time reversal invariance, food, right? Because of that very much puts time reversal on.
Well, the other terms are
yeah. Yes?
The first outcome of school then is well known that we want to do theory in IR.
True. If you really decouple the closed string sector, right, like it's done in the side of the paper, if you take this alpha zero slope limit, right, then indeed, and if you push your cutoff in your theory infinitely far, then you have the problem of mixing the IR that you. Exactly. I agree with you. Yes. So what we meant is the expansion in theta with the cutoff at the point scale.
Okay. That's completely different than Green Freeman's theory with theta.
No, no, I'm completely different. I agree with you. We simply took the the standard model and expanded it in the first order in theta. It's not the whole thing, right? Meaning the cutoff at the Planck scale, that is not complete alpha, not complete zero slope limit, you can at least make sense out of the IR remix. It doesn't happen. If you introduce explicitly the cutoff, I don't think that it's a sort of problem. But yes,
first of all, the document of the theory is highly high. Also, side one with the map is only a single order of feet. It's a perfect system. I'm finding the fact that it's very good. I'm going to take the thing from you. So, there's a lot of other stuff.
Well, I'm explicitly stating that my energies of my particles are much lower than 1 over the square root of 3. In that sense, the star product can be expected. Then the other thing that you said, that maybe there is no one to have, there could be several variants of the non-commutative field theory. So the correction here, in fact, has a coefficient depending on how you arrange things. Anyways, it's important to study what kind of sensitivity in principle you have to this thing. And what you can actually prove is that theta, and at least its magnetic part, by its quantum numbers, gets the coupling to the spin of the part. And We had calculated or estimated what it is for a year. And then you can search for that with the experiments that are called walk comparison or magnetometer experiments. And here you see the effect is that the spin of the particle couples to the external direction given by theta. And then if you see in the laboratory somewhere, the Earth with the magnetic field rotates relative to the fixed the sky, and then your precession frequency gets modulated by 24 hours. People have been looking for this effect for 20 years and achieved great progress. And usually, by the way, these experiments are spin-offs of the EDM experiments. This is the same species of atoms that are being used. And only recently have atomic people started the GPKN experiments towards searching the signatures of foreign spirals. And in a lab, we'll have a visit by Mike Navales from Princeton, who has developed a new magnetometer with mercury and potassium, and who now holds the record of the smallest magnetic field and detected within this system. So now he said something for sort of mapping the profiles of the brain of the faculty members in Princeton, but at the same time he wants to apply it to study the Lorentz spirals. And this is no connection, right? With medical application and wireless spirals, but the same thing.
You're leaving yourself so open. You should just go
on. It's too easy.
Well, what I was trying to argue that the non-commutative piece we have an interaction inside the coupling with the nuclear spin on the order of the hadronic scale Q divided by the non-commutative scale, and that has to be smaller than the accuracy of this experiment because they seem nearly resolved, and then you end up with the non-commutative scale for I. Well, I have very little time left, maybe 5-10 minutes.
Well, we start at place.
Yeah, okay.
So we can interrupt you 5 minutes.
Right. So this is to tell you a little bit about my paper as well. So when we simply took this expression with all the expansion and looked at the first part, which is in the language of the effective field theory, the response to the Wobble effective footprint, right? Corresponds to the dimension 5/3. And we set up to classify all possible dimensions 5/3, and there are certain conditions that we follow, which are small prints here. So there's a quadratic in the same field, the periodic field, the purification theorem, not useful on the equation of Holmes, not a total periodic. These are all standard. Right? This is the rules you would apply in effective field theory anyway.
Well, for the most of people, it's not going to
understand. But then there are two very important things that pertain to Lorentz invariance, and that is Lorentz invariant except for a preferred frame. Right? This is a weak point of this. And then should not contain any coordinates explicitly.
That's pretty much the main fundamental invariant.
So this is an operator that has all proper contractions between the derivatives n and mu, right? If the value of n mu is zero, then this operator disappears, right? So, if n mu happens to be, say, a gradient of a scalar field, right? Then the theory is completely Lorentz invariant, right? And if you just Right. It's a spontaneous breaking in a sense, so there is a vector-like or tensor-like effect. That's the approach we took, and we classified everything for the scalars, vectors, and fermions. And Well, it's an interesting conclusion that there is no modification of this person relation for real schemes, for real schemes. And why it's important, in other approaches, the dispersion relation for a real scale gets modified, right? You can see that there's a discrepancy right here. Then people took this approach very closely, the good thing about effective field theory, again, is you can imply the different sets, right? You can take these interactions parameterized by operators and study their consequences at low energies, like we need to know. Or you can apply them in the cosmological setting and get the limits on this operator, or astrophysical settings, get the limits on these operators from astrophysics. Recently, that has been the limit thing improved quite a bit in the favor of cosmological. And what I want to stress is that, first of all, the sensitivity gets better than 1 hour and 5 level. And the second thing is that as physics and law tests provide complementary constraints on different linear combination of parameters. And you can imply all the machinery of the field theory, that is, you can study how they operate. Links transform each other, you can set constraints on some, I don't know, cheap work containing operators because they will have mix into the photon, etc. There is a nationalness issue. This comes again and again in effective field theory. There is a nationalness issue. Like in this particular case, what it means is that actually, if you read many papers by Alan, you will see that actually you can break the sense invariance this way at dimension 3 level. And if you apply the effective field theory logic into this, you would say, oh well, then the instrument branch should be unplanned. We're all bad, right? Literally. Also, what happens if you have the interactions at dimension 5 level through the loops that will easily dimensionally transmute into dimension 3 with the square divergence, and so that you have an estimate with the operator of dimension 3 is a loop factor times this dimensionless coefficient psi times the ratio of the UV scale Galois over M Planck. If they are in the same order, you do get it back for your M Planck here. In front, which is a disaster. And that's, then you will have this, again, fine-tuning problem, what to do, right? And, so far we found two solutions. One we found in Rob is that in principle, if you, instead of this preferred frame in this operator, you actually take an operator with a twist, and that is the traceless, irreducible symmetric tensor. But this one actually does not induce any lambda squared divergence by construction. Or if it were complete, you would say that this is the sort of optical deformation of the background. And the second solution, and that operators that break super symmetric, and this is the new bit, this thought that I published with Steve and Bruce Nimley from Mississippi and work also with Pasha. And we looked at the Lorentz violating operators imposing explicitly that the operators themselves do not break super symmetric. And the results are actually amazing. It turns out that if that is the request, dimension 3 and dimension 4 operators are strictly forbidden, that you can start only from the dimension 5 operators. By the way, the operators we found with Lua are also forbidden, they break supersymmetry. It has an important consequences, well, first of all, we kind of proved that in this approach, all the effects starts from 1 over m in the heavy scale, and that's already quite powerful. That's the requirement that follows from gauge invariance and supersymmetry. And then you can understand that a little bit, but anyways, it's the way I want to do it. I will explain it in detail. What the claim that I want to make is you actually, you can calculate the corrections to the dispersion force. And although it sort of looks similar, but it's very, very much different now. The corrections go like mass squared, 1, and then the power squared here. So at any energy that is smaller than M Planck, the corrections are actually much smaller than M squared. So for anything related to astrophysics, this thing, this approach does not predict any possible large effects. There is a protection of dimension 3 operators by Susie Brayton. Dimension 3 is just through the Susie Brayton mass times the Lemurian divergence. So it's sorted in that sense, isn't
it? What is the reason for assuming these long Lorentz invariant terms have this Lorentz invariant form of the indices? Might be that that it's that property that makes them visible at low energy. And that's been just that there's an old claim by Nielsen, yes, that if you take general non Lorentz invariant terms in the Lorentz object, they tend to be suppressed at low energy. It is impossible. It's just this particular term. A type of term that you're assuming that you can't suppress the line and easily show it off.
Is it gauge invariant sense of presence? All the terms are gauge invariant. Maybe what I remember he was trying to derive gauge invariance from the absence of Lorentz
violations.
There were
other papers about it. Okay. The first paper when he takes the animal statement of just relational rotation invariance and so on. And claims that this term, whether it's in the contraction of the indices or is completely not, not that it's invariant, but there is a claim that it's in the sort of
so I just wonder, you know, if there's something in that claim. I don't know about this, and I have to do another
right, but is it an important assumption?
Well, yes, I mean, in a way, here, we keep in mind that somehow if the Lorentz invariance got this vector can dance, and which is not necessarily could be not the case.
Right, but the mathematical structure of the term does reflect Lorentz.
Indeed. So I would say it's a modification of an action by Lorentz non-invariant background. That's better words than Lorentz violation. So
let's ask the theory, what forces the denominators to be M Planck? Or maybe okay. Some other mass scale?
Of course. Indeed, even I put it's a UV scale, right? Whatever physics is responsible for it, it's a UV scale, right?
And are those called dependent on mass particle, or are they independent?
They are proportional to the coefficients you started with, but then of course the mass squared is here, right? So
but do they themselves also depend on mass, or is that universal for all mass particles?
No, it's not universal in a sense. I mean, you can have different operators for different particles, then we still have this freedom, right?
So but if a particle is massless, E squared is still E squared.
Indeed. And that's because all operators that here we introduced in SUSY frameworks for a scalar, for example, could be reduced something to this. So immediately for a massless particle it's zero, and for a mass particle it's squared. And that's quite interesting, and I'd say an unexpected result. Well, anyways, I'm coming to the very end of my talk, and I should say that there are certain claims of loop quantum gravity that are certainly not fitting in the present form of the effective field. And there are claims of frame independence, which I don't know how to implement. There is a special anisotropy, which will always be broken if you prefer frames, should you start moving slowly about it. And the modifications of dispersion in relation to a singlet scalar, which is just exemplifies the way that in the simplest case, And it's what I'm trying to say, it's a good thing that there are contributions because it gives a chance to learn how quantum gravity would merge with the rest of the physics. Here is the swim line I want to open and list the deficiencies about the effective field theory approach that I see, for example. Why is it we take this preferred frame to begin with? It's more or less your question, right?
I'm going to say in particular term of your thinking had basic mathematics instruction.
I wait maybe a couple of minutes.
Well, that makes you finish.
And then the most, of course, essential part here is that we miss out completely the grammar hypothesis, right? We introduced this background on the Minkowski metric and in the curved backgrounds they bound to the functions of coordinates. Then the kinetic turns will be introduced, there will be propagating fields. Okay. They're propagating fields that are likely to be light, and then that means that we miss effectively light degrees of freedom, which is very bad when you try to construct effective field theory. Try to construct the Fermi fraction without it. It would be very challenging. So, this case should be addressed. There are other issues, and that all arise from the fact that all these backgrounds of the student must be dynamic. I'd say that there are not that many models that condense tensors and vectors. One of the interesting examples done by John, and it's been very closely matched by the post conversation on the for me, that's the deficiencies of quantum gravity. When I say, do you really think that the loop quantum gravity would not merge with effective field theory at the low scale? And this, given all the good things we know about the effective field theory, I'd say it's a point to worry at the very least. Maybe you guys also missed by any chance new infrared degrees of freedom. Should that happen, that should be very important for whatever you do with quantum gravity. Well, if effective field theory should be in the present form, rejected or modified. It should provide the rules according to which it should be modified so that you have some mechanism of comparable usefulness. And what I'm coming from phenomenology, so what I would like to say that you should not concentrate on one thing, not only the high energy behavior in the cosmos, but what I was trying to argue that the spin dynamics at low energies would be equally important. So you have to have the complete description for all phenomena, right, and the mechanism. And also, since I'm so interested in synergies, I'd say, what are the CPT, etc. properties of your one-on-one plan, it shouldn't be that difficult to figure that out. And so, there are also some mysterious things about Minkowski space, but that's probably because I don't understand. Right? When I look at the effective field theory derived from Kappa Minkowski spaces in this recent paper by Wes, what you see is explicit coordinate dependence. Right? There's x mu entering right in the Lagrangian. Okay? So how that can you frame independence? So, yes, but don't you violate any conservation?
You're looking at me. I don't know that figure.
Right. No. Indeed. Wes does this thing, right? He develops star products, establishes either with the map, gets an effective thing. Here is the interaction that has X mu, right? No problems. From his part. So,
I just raised this question at random, but to show that I think that at the moment both positions are not completely perfect, and one should work as virgin. And so I finally came to my conclusions is that low energy precision searches of CP, CPT, etc. Allow to probe short distance physics that is outside of reach of the existing collaborators. But effective field theory approach can be applied to Stein effects of nearest by open guidelines. Precision measurements as physics and cosmology impose complementary and very stringent bounds at better than one on one planet level. And I'd say that the new piece that I communicated to you today, that we classified all Lorentz non-invariant grounds in Suzy theories. Right? So if in some one day we know how to do list the operators in Suzy theories, so one day the string people will say, here is the new background we have that can serve supersymmetry that has this and this indices, right? We would know at which order to use the first piece. Maybe it's trivial, but the conclusion for phenomenology is not trivial. That's saying that distortion relations are not modified, and also that all the effects have to have UV scale downstairs. And finally, that I strongly feel that quantum gravity must work with effective field theory at some point. And the way it happens should be a major, point of attention from quantum gravity community and maybe from some parts of, interested parts of finance and physics. Thank you very much.
So some people have suggested there are fundamental sources of deep coherence. Why would this be inherited from information from magnets? You know, if you set constraints on that,
it's certainly one thing that may set up gravity from the rest of the interactions. And we did have thought by Hogan a couple of months ago where the quantum mechanics itself, and this, I don't know how to put on the language of the effective field theory, this very well might be missed by this rather mechanistic effective field theory approach. And well, some people play with, fermion-like webs, and then you do modify quantum mechanics quite a bit, but that's, I don't know how sensible it is. And then you end up with theories, Zeigler papers, modifying the entitlement papers. And then you end up with theories that are not unitary, like I said. And so the information is lost in the way I have not given this a very deep thought. I would be very different from serious comments. It would be, of course, very spectacular to find something along these lines, right? Like, can I be put in any... right.
I was more technical the other way, saying, well, if there was something like that, I would expect it to show up, at some point.
It's true. What's needed to go ahead is some sort of a format, right? But the recent claims by Pullen are interesting because that thing you can formalize with this, right? And try to see where which distance would have presses.
So you asked the question why those kinds of terms were entering. Was it easy to extend this analysis to the general Lorentz interaction?
Without the background, right? But
yeah.
With
not having
I don't see why I should do that. I think it's probably best.
Let me let me make a comment that will call on them. If the response is pleased by the quantum gravity, then just turn it back to computation. And I just hope it's going to go ahead and publicize that. We'll be meeting over the Halloween weekend from the 28th to the 31st in quantum gravity here. And many people who were responsible for the computation that you described are going to be here giving talks. And the schedule is now on the webpage. So please come, and there'll be certainly a lot of discussion and controversy about precisely those issues. Because there's not, unfortunately, there's not one. All of the calculations and predictions from the quantum gravity come from taking onslaughts of the ground state and then going consequences. And there are now a number of those in the literature and in the Jewish predictions of this week. So it's not just between you and the
Jewish. Yeah, right. I understand that I sort of group you guys together, but there is no music.
On the other hand, I think that the organizers is one of them have tried to get all the people together who do those things, so we'll have, I think it's a session or two just to argue about those issues.
Just a weird thing on the related to Danielle's comment, which is that I heard a talk recently where there was a claim that CPT violations should be associated with decoherence, if it's like in connection with decoherence. I can't remember the details right now. The other thing I wanted to ask you, comment something on anomalies. Do you regard them as within effective field theory or not? A couple of weeks ago, Emil Mottola was here and was sort of claiming that they really couldn't be captured by effective fields. They certainly don't seem to come from power series expansions in the standard degrees of freedom.
Well, it's all happening. Happen.
How do they fit into your general ideology that everything should be?
They depend very sensitive of how you really arise to the
actual that's making up the usual criterion where local criterion meets. You cannot get out of the term from someone.
Axial anomaly or formal. I mean, is it a counterexample to your claim about effective field theory to capture everything, or can you broaden the notion of effective field theory? It's certainly a low energy phenomenon. I mean, pion decay is certainly a low energy phenomenon.
Why can't you broaden the effective field theory?
This is a phenomenal question. So it's out of local, which is actually the new side dimension, the local confirmation.
And then if you're non local, it's a very short distance.
Yeah. So I'm not looking at things that you're I mean, not all these elements in general, there's a thing to the entire physics. The change in the side of
so,
maybe
a question.
Well, actually, why don't we, I think we've got people there, why don't we close this phase and come back?
I'm going to go to the next one. Wait, what's that?
Trust the farming.